The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin. In Texas.
Hey guys, welcome back to We Met at Acme. I am so insanely excited for today's episode with Matthew Hussey. He has been on my like manifestation dream podcast guest list forever, and I've definitely DM'd him before trying to get him on. All of the things. Anyway, he is on the pod today, and he is this awesome just dating coach, life coach extraordinaire. I'm so excited for you to hear this episode with him. And before we get into it, I'm going to answer some of your voice questions. Don't forget to go to speakpipe.com/messages to leave yours. So we'll start with this one.
Hey, Lindsay. Okay. So I have a red flag, deal breaker, no big deal question. Okay, so I've been with my boyfriend for 5 months, going on 6 months, and his parents are planning a Europe trip this summer. They're footing the bill, which is awesome. They're amazing. I love them. And our responsibility is, or the one thing that we're in charge of paying for, is our plane tickets. Is it a red flag, deal breaker, NBD, if he doesn't offer to purchase my plane ticket, or am I being a weirdo? Also, if you have any insight that you can offer as to how to bring up financial, you know, compromises, or just, you know, paying for the bills and going out and et cetera, et cetera. I know that you've covered this in your posts before, but if you could just kind of enlighten us more. I love you so much. I've DM'd you before, and your advice has been so great, and I appreciate you. And congratulations on your family and your new baby. And yeah, thank you for everything. Bye.
First of all, thank you. You're so sweet. This is an interesting scenario. My first thought that came to mind was, what is your financial situation and what is your boyfriend's? Meaning, like, does he make double what you make? Are you unemployed? Are you guys in college? Kind of that background info. I would say if you're on the same playing field of making the same amount of money, it's not a big deal that you're buying your own flight. I think that his parents are being so generous and footing this bill for an insanely expensive trip. I mean, obviously these international flights are insane and ridiculous, but if that's the one thing that you're paying for to get to experience this trip, I think it's okay. I mean, obviously in an ideal world, would he pay for your flight too? Yeah, duh. But I don't know. I'm thinking about when I go on trips with Steven, you know, before we were married, we each paid for our flights. It's not like he paid for both of our flights. So I imagine if we were in your scenario, meaning if we went on a trip with his family and they didn't pay for our flights, I would still probably pay for mine too, and wouldn't expect Steven to. And I wouldn't feel resentful towards him just because that's like the only thing that I'd be paying for, you know? And it's a trip that I probably would have gone on anyway, because I would have wanted to take a trip like that in the summer, you know? If it's like totally out of your wheelhouse and you wouldn't have even wanted to take a trip like that, yet you're being forced to pay this extremely high, you know, flight cost, then that's one thing. And I would understand like how the resentments come into play. But I feel like this is not a big deal. We can definitely look past this. And then just in terms of bringing up financial compromises in general, we have a few episodes on this, so definitely check those out. You can just, one is with Vivian too, one is with Mrs. Dow Jones, one is about getting financially naked with Shannon McLay. So go back and check those out. I will say financially compromising is tough and really awkward in relationships, and you want to try to figure it out the earlier the better. Like, I remember on my second date with Steven, I learned how much he was paid, like what his salary was. I learned like just a lot of financial transparency between us. And I feel like that contributed a lot to us being able to have these vulnerable, uncomfortable conversations about finances. When we moved in, and I know you guys are only 5 or 6 months in, but when we moved in together, we made a spreadsheet, like an Excel spreadsheet of all of our finances, what we have saved, you know, what's in debt, where, what we have invested, all this stuff. And it was really, really helpful for us. Before that, I would say like when we were 5, 6 months in, we would talk about finances when they would come up, like if someone got a raise or a, like a big partnership deal and things like that. And we would talk about it then. I pretty much made it clear in the beginning that dinners were something that like I like to be treated to, but I didn't really have to make that clear because he always kind of did that. Maybe there was one time where he put something like on our joint credit card after we were married or something. And I was like, oh, you didn't like take me to dinner or something, just jokingly. And, you know, he likes to do that. And I like to be taken to dinner. So I think if that's important to you, that's a conversation that you should have for sure. And just don't be afraid to talk about this because you could end up not talking about it and like repressing all these feelings that you're uncomfortable with the fact that you're splitting a bill or the fact that you're paying for a flight. And then you end up like tallying things against your partner and it ends up spoiling the relationship in a lot of other ways. So make sure you get ahead of these conversations, but they're not fun and they are not sexy. So expect to have unsexy financial conversations. Okay. Playing another.
Hey, Lindsay, quick question for you. Actually, not super quick because it's a little loaded, but I'm going to try and go quick. So I'm 31. I've been with my boyfriend for about 3 years, turning 32 this summer. And we have been living together now for a few months. I just decided that it's like the best next step to like just see, you know, if he's really the one. And we have kind of this issue where I just don't like really any of his friends. And I like really don't think that I'm normally like a super picky, you know, mean person about like what his friends are like, but they're very different from my friends. They would never hang out. Like, it's kind of like they're the type of people that I would never choose to be friends with if I met them. So that's hard. And he's been really nice about it. He's so sweet. He like doesn't force me hanging out with them. He's like truly like so, such a successful, nice, caring guy. He's amazing. So I don't know. I just, that has been hard. And then secondly, I also find my boyfriend's brother very attractive, which sounds sick and crazy. And I really don't want to feel that way, but I do. And it's just a lot. And I'm scared of getting older. Please help. Thank you. Bye.
Oh my God. You totally threw me off for that after the friend thing. I did not expect you to say that about the boyfriend's brother. Let's start with the first part. The friends issue, not a big deal in my opinion. You don't have to be best friends with his friends, and the friends that you'll make, if this is your person, will be like your couple friends in the future, and it's okay. Like, you don't have to be best friends with his friends. You shouldn't actively dislike them though. I wonder why that is. Like, are they rude to you? Are they just like immature and love video games? Like, what is the reason? If it's just that they're not your kind of people, I don't think that that is a deal breaker at all. Like, as a person listening to this episode or anyone listening, does your husband like really vibe with your best friends, all of them? Like, no, not necessarily. It's, you know, we're two different genders. Like, we might have different interests, whatever. It doesn't mean that you won't have like friends that are both of yours at some point in your life. These are just like the friends they started with, and who knows where those friendships will go, you know? So that's not that big of a deal. Having a crush on his brother, however, or just finding him attractive, rather, you didn't say you had a crush. You know what? Like, we're humans. If his brother is attractive and you find him attractive, that's okay. As long as you're not having like sex dreams about his brother and trying to hook up with him, you know, we all have eyes. We can see if someone's attractive. We don't ever have to share that information with anyone. So keep that to yourself, like forever. And I think we need to get into this episode. It is a long one because obviously Matthew Hussey has a lot of really good things to say. So try to make it to the end. I promise it will be worth it. And if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it with a friend. It means the world to me when you share episodes that you like. And if you haven't written a review already, it would also mean a lot to me and mean a lot to Zachary. So don't be mean to a baby. Okay, hope you enjoy. If you're like me and had a BlackBerry phone at one point and actually even know what that is, you're a millennial. And if you're a millennial, it's time to add Clarence Multi-Active Cream to your daily routine, like yesterday. You've been adulting for a while, so the daily stress of swiping left, binging the fourth season of Gossip Girl, and just trying to keep your life together can cause stress aging, which, yes, that's a thing. But the good news is Europe's number one skincare line has a solution that you can trust. It's rooted in nature and innovated with science. Clarins has a long legacy of creating industry-first, plant-forward products. Using a skin charger complex made of 2% niacinamide and sea holly bioextract, Clarins Multi-Active Cream has been clinically proven to target the first visible signs of aging by smoothing lines and wrinkles, refining pores, evening tone and texture, and strengthening the skin's moisture barrier. See, my son is a fan as well. While Multi-Active Cream can't bring back the golden age of boy bands, it can de-stress your skin. Clarins Multi-Active Cream is available online now. I've been using Multi-Active for over a week, and it has saved me. I can't tell you how much having a baby has aged me, and this cream truly does it all. It makes my fine lines and my pores look smaller, refines my skin's texture, enhances radiance, and gives me 24-hour hydration. Go to clarins.com/acme and get Multi-Active Day and Night Cream for 10% off, a free welcome gift, plus free shipping on your first order. That's clarins.com/acme with promo code ACME. clarins.com/acme with promo code ACME. Hey guys, welcome back to We Met at Acme. I'm so excited to be here with the one and only Matthew Hussey. Hi.
Lovely to be here.
So happy you're here. It's so funny. I was just looking because I was like, I definitely have DM'd you before to come on my podcast. And I just looked and of course I embarrassingly was like, hey, can you come on my podcast? So this is such a big deal for me. So thank you so much for coming on.
I once DM'd someone to do something and then I saw them at a party.
Yeah.
And this is so embarrassing. The first thing that came out of my mouth was, I DM'd you and you never wrote back.
Oh, no.
And they weren't on their own. It was in like a circle.
Oh,
there were like a bunch of people there. And this was like quite a known person. And I don't know why I handled it so awkwardly, but I did. And I still look back now and I'm like, I can't believe that why did I embarrass her
I'm
like that?
I'm dying to know who it was.
No, but you'll never know.
Maybe off.
I just was like, I shouldn't have. I just made her uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I was like, if someone did that to me, I'd be like, why are you blowing my,
it's like when someone's like, will you follow me? But you're like in person with them and they like bring out their phone. They're like, I just followed you. Will you follow me?
Worse.
That's terrible.
That's worse. Yeah. I was just an innocent, bumbling idiot.
So before we get into it, what is your favorite romantic gesture?
My wife, Audrey, always jokes with me that I am like not that excited when she gets me a gift. She said, like, she'll get me a little gift and she'll be like, you just don't care when I get you like a little gift. But if I do something for you, if I like help you get something done faster, or if I, you know, something you thought you were going to have to do when you got home, I've already done it for you. That means the world to you. And I think that probably is a reflection of the fact that anything that makes my life easier or just saves me time, or that makes me feel very supported and loved. So I think when someone does something for me, that means a lot.
That's totally acts of service. That must
it's
be
acts
your love
of service.
Language.
Yeah. I never would have said that, by the way. I would have said it was touch, or I would have said it was, I don't know, maybe words of affirmation. I like them all. I mean, I really do.
I
don't want anyone to hear this and think, you know, it should only be one. I like all of them. But I think these days I'm just, because things are really busy, maybe just that sense of overwhelm when someone does something for me, like acts of service, that makes me feel really, really good.
Yeah, I'm with
and
you
I think
on
if
that.
You're used to carrying a lot, when someone comes along and they truly support you, that's a really, you really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, and you trust them to support you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good sign. Speaking of Audrey, your beautiful wife, who I just met, how did you two meet?
Yeah, there she is in the background, in the corner, watching on. We met at an engagement party in London. A friend of mine invited me to his engagement party, and I never really see this friend. It's not like I, you know, this is someone that every couple of months I hang out with when I'm back in London. I happened to be back for Christmas for like 2 or 3 weeks, and I decided to go, even though I didn't really want to. I was like, this is a thing. I don't want to have to leave the house. And I went. And on the way there, a friend of mine who was driving me said, there's this girl there that everyone's in love with, and we're all afraid you're going to steal her. And then when I walked in, I saw her, and I thought, I think that's the person they're talking about. And so we talked, and actually she spoke to me first. I was like watching the boxing. There was a really big fight on that night. And we were looking at each other a lot back and forth. And then she came and started like watching the boxing. And then she asked me a question about it, which is something she has never done since. She never has shown 1 ounce of interest in boxing since that day. But we started talking, and that was that. Yeah.
That's really cute. Also, great like background for someone to say to you, everyone's in love with her, because that planted in your head, like as a man who I feel like, you know, men love the challenge, you were like, oh, but I need to make her in love with me.
I definitely, but it was clear to me, like there was something, it wasn't just this, like, this is a gorgeous human being, everyone. Mm-hmm. It was like, there's something about this person, the way she interacts with people, the way she is.
And yeah.
Anyone who meets her knows that, like you see her.
Yeah. I mean, I met her for 2 seconds and I agree with you, but I have to ask because we're into astrology on the podcast. I don't know how you feel about astrology because I've never heard you like reference it. You might hate it. You're a Gemini, I think.
I am.
Okay. What's Audrey's sign?
I have absolutely
when's
no
her
clue.
Birthday? And we'll take it from there.
May 7th.
Okay. She's
I'm glad
a Taurus.
I knew that one.
She's a Taurus.
She's a Taurus.
Oh, you guys are a great match. Not that I was questioning it, but.
Right. You're I have like, your blessing.
You're like, I hate
your
this astrology stuff.
Blessing.
So you never use it when you're like, you know, helping people and coaching them.
It's like, it would for me be like saying, do you talk to the Easter Bunny for help on when you coach people?
Men hate astrology. It's so crazy. But I feel like they're starting to get a little bit more into it. But
catching on with men?
Yeah, some.
Is that because they've realized that talking about it to women is useful?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. They
right.
want to
so
sleep
not,
with women.
There's no genuine interest. Yeah, it's just from a pure agenda perspective.
That's
I had a joke
true.
Once that I was that you can't trust men who bring up astrology on a date.
No, no, no. Or who know the time of their birth. That's like a viral meme because then, you know, they know their birth chart, whatever. Then some other girl has asked them before.
Oh, they've been down
they
that
know.
Road already.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah. I try not to talk about astrology at all.
Yeah.
Because I worry about being impolite.
Yeah.
So I just shut up about it. Uh-huh. I think it's for me, whatever people find interesting or useful, or I'm like, fair enough. If that's, you know, I think a lot of people I meet just enjoy it.
Right.
They don't. I meet a lot of people that I feel like you don't really live your life. There are definitely people I know who live their life around those things.
Right.
But there's a lot of people I know that I think just like the fun of it. It's like fun to look at your sign and my sign and what does it all mean? And it's like a game.
It's fun. And it's sometimes a way to understand people better. Like for that reason, I'm super into it. But I wouldn't be like, oh my God, I can't go to the mall that day because blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I suppose where we differ is I can't find any basis for those things telling us that it does help us understand anyone better. But it's fun, I think, to like, there's something fun about going, this thing is supposed to have these traits or these attributes.
Right,
or
right.
This. And oh, you tick 7 out of 9 of those.
You know what would make an amazing podcast episode for you? you should have an astrologer come on and give you a reading and then you should react to it like on an episode, because I'd be so curious if she was spot on, or he, you know, maybe a male astrologer.
I wouldn't trust him. Maybe. Uh-huh. I don't think I've ever brought up astrology on our podcast.
Yeah.
Ever.
It could be interesting. I would listen for sure. Before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about the dating shows on Netflix. You mentioned Love is Blind. Are you watching it? And do you watch those shows?
I've never seen an episode.
Really? But you know the concept.
People stand in a room opposite each other and they can't see each other and they get to know each other. And then at the end, they decide, do they decide if they want to see each other again based on what they've experienced of each other?
So they
or they
have
see
to,
each other and then they decide.
They have to get engaged first.
I didn't realize they get engaged.
Mm-hmm. Without seeing each other. Oh, and then once they get engaged, they're allowed to see each other.
The good thing about that is you can easily break off an engagement.
Totally.
That's not like, there's no paperwork there.
But they still make them go down the aisle for the most part.
So they do get married.
Well, they make them go down the aisle and then they say, it's instead of being like, do you take this person? Like, there's like, should we go through with this or not? But they, you know, for TV's sake, make them go down the aisle. And then like, usually one of them is like, I can't do this. But every so often, someone actually, but someone says,
this
yes.
This is madness.
Right. Do you think, like, how important do you think physical is when, you know, falling in love with someone?
I think sexual chemistry is very important. But I think sexual chemistry is actually quite an interesting thing, because you can have it with people that you wouldn't necessarily consider your type, or that you wouldn't pick it out in a dating app lineup. Mm. You know, that's the danger. I talk about this in my book. It's this idea that we disqualify people a lot in life based on physical attractiveness before we've ever had a chance to experience them at all.
Right.
And chemistry doesn't happen in a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Chemistry comes from animation. You can see the way someone's like nodding their head to some
right.
music
mm-hmm.
and kind of like look at them differently, because there's something about the way they move or the way they carry themselves that you suddenly are like, they're kind of attractive. The way they move is kind of attractive. The way they walk, the way they are, the way they emote. So I think chemistry is very important. I just think that we don't realize how many people we might have chemistry with.
Yeah.
If we actually gave it more of a chance. Everyone's had a person that they were attracted to in person, and then they were trying to show their friends pictures of them, and they were like, none of these pictures do them justice.
Right, right.
But that's because chemistry happened in person. It's not a picture.
It's so true.
The opposite is also true. You can see someone you think is like magazine level gorgeous in a picture, and then you meet them in person and you go,
it's not there.
It's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, I feel like, why so many couples come out of work. Like, when you work with someone, you see, like, there's no pressure because you're not thinking, I'm going to have a romantic connection with someone, with this person at work, but you're spending time together. You see the way that they move, as you said, like the way that, so I feel like that's why a lot of relationships will come out of like the office and things like that.
I think that's true. That's why when people say to me, I never see anyone I'm attracted to, I'm like, where are you?
Yeah, right.
Where are you? I don't think that becomes a kind of psychological thing where you're not spending time really getting under the surface with anybody. You're kind of disqualifying everyone constantly. But there's so many gorgeous people around. Like, you get to know people and you speak to people, and that's, you know, we still got to find someone we find attractive that's attracted to us. But when we're never finding anyone attractive, I think that we're not really seeing the world.
Yeah.
We're kind of observing at some strange distance where we've disassociated.
I agree with that. Or like, your standards are just delusional.
Yeah, but no one's, I think it's a false standard.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I don't buy it that it's just that my standards are really, really high, because I think that's a protection mechanism. It's to stop you from getting rejected.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone really feel there's a shortage of attractive people in the world?
That's true.
Really? Like, I mean, there's just, walk down New York for 5 minutes.
Right. Exactly.
There's not a shortage of attractive people. I think there's an abundance of fear of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
I want to reject everyone before they can reject me so that I could just say, I'm just never attracted to anyone. It's a very safe position to play.
That's so true.
So that's, I think, what a lot of people do.
But then what do you do to, like, the question that I get asked the most, and I feel like you're way more qualified to answer this than I am, is like, how do you go up to someone in person and like talk to them? How do you talk to people in person, especially as a woman? Because I feel like men have the upper hand when it comes to starting a conversation in person. Men are less fazed by getting rejected. Like, how does, if you were, you know, kind of like how Audrey did it, should you bring up a commonality, something that you see that they're interested in? What is the best, or just like a hi?
I think the big paradigm shift for people is realizing we get nervous when we think about having to approach people. And that idea of I've got to go and approach someone is very, very scary for most people. Some people don't seem to have that gene. They just will go up to anybody anytime. But that's not most of us. And what I have found in coaching people is that there is a way to switch it where instead of focusing on approaching people, you focus on your own approachability. And you go, what I need, like, we're all just like atoms that need to collide, right? And if you never collide with any atoms, you never get any bonds.
Mm-hmm.
So I just need to find a way to create more collisions in my life. Dating apps are a way that people have been able to like create more collisions at a distance.
Right.
The problem, as we know, is that collisions at a distance are much more flaky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harder to make something really stick. It's hard to even, for a lot of people, make it to the point of a date.
Right.
But in, quote, real life, we just need to focus on how do I create more collisions? And one of the ways we create more collisions with other people, with other atoms, is just to become more approachable. So then we're into saying, not how do I approach, but what are some key ways that I could increase my approachability? And that starts to create a different energy. Firstly, it's less scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we're really, in some ways, what we're doing is we're focusing on the other person and going, I want to make it easy for them to do something.
Right.
So how do I make it easier for them? When I think of me and Audrey meeting, like I said, there was a lot of eye contact. That made it easier for both of us to be like, oh, there's something.
Yes, they're looking at me. I could tell I'm looking at them.
Yeah, and I feel a little more brave mm-hmm. as a result. Mm-hmm. More eye contact means I feel a little more brave. But right. it's still kind of scary because I got to walk across the room and I have to right. do something. And so like in her case, and I've been talking about this for years, it's what's so funny is like when your life becomes a kind of meta level example of what you've always talked about. But I've always said to people that there are three things you can focus on: eye contact, proximity, and then just saying something. Doesn't matter what you say, almost just say something. Because when you say something, it's a green light
mm-hmm.
to somebody else. You're not trying to say something that makes them go, oh my God, that was the smartest, wittiest,
right.
most charismatic thing anyone said to me all day. You're saying something so that they go, oh, it's okay to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a green light. So, you know, we had that step one, eye contact. Step two is get proximity. Well, when I was standing watching the screen and Audrey came and watched the screen with me, it's not like she came over to look at me and start a conversation. She just came over and we were side by side with like four other people
right.
all watching the screen. But that proximity makes it so much easier for someone to turn their head and say something. And then, of course, she did say something and that was a green light for me.
Yeah.
You know, I was happy to do everything. From that point on, I'm like, I'll keep this conversation going. But it became the green light. And I think so many people are so focused on their own fear of getting rejected that they're not focused enough on other people's fear of approaching.
Right.
And so they're not giving enough green lights.
That's such a good point. It's so interesting. Someone once told me this. Tell me if you agree. Someone said, if a woman talks to you, don't read into it necessarily, right? But if a man talks to you, like at all, unless it's like for work uh-huh. or like a specific purpose, he's into you 100%. Like if a man goes at like, even if it's like a guy friend, you know, who like goes out of, where like he's into you.
Mm.
Do you agree with that? Like,
yeah, there may be some truth to that.
Right. Because like, you know,
there may be some truth,
you're a married man. Like, you would never just text a woman to talk for no purpose, right? Like,
no.
Unless.
Men often don't even do that with their existing friends.
Are you kidding? I have to tell my husband, like, it's so-and-so's birthday. It's your friend's birthday. He's like, okay.
But the danger is in mistaking attention for intention.
Mm.
Those are very different things. Someone yes. can be giving you attention because they want attention back. And there's some short-term goal they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
They want validation. You might be one of 10 people they're texting right now. That they texted you doesn't communicate anything about their intentions.
Right.
But it does, they're giving you attention,
mm-hmm.
which means that they want some kind of attention back.
Totally.
Right. So I think that what you can say, you can't say when a guy talks to you, there's any intentionality behind it. What you can say is they're looking for some attention.
Mm.
And that can be a gateway to intentionality, but the mistake is in getting too excited
right.
about attention, which happens all the time. Well, there's a entire chapter in my new book, yeah. Love Life, which is called How to Tell Love Stories.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of that chapter is to review how we create love stories in our mind and the kinds of love stories that get us into trouble.
Right.
And I talk about four levels of importance to a love story. That there's admiration, which is just when you see someone or know someone and you think that there's something great about them or that they're just hot. There's mutual attraction, where both of you feel a connection or some chemistry. Then there's commitment, where on top of that, you're both saying yes to each other. And then there's compatibility, which is where you actually feel like we're not just saying yes to each other, i.e. we're exclusive, we're in a relationship, but we actually work. This works. We do well together.
Mm.
Not we are constantly butting heads. We are constantly making each other miserable. One of us is getting their needs met and the other one isn't. And the whole point of this chapter that I walk people through is that there are way too many people who are at level two, mutual attraction. And instead of seeing it as, frankly, not that important at that stage, they have told themselves this huge love story
right.
about how valuable this person is mm-hmm. and how they're scared to let them go and how, you know, this person who they've got this amazing attraction with and they feel so connected to and they have an amazing time with any time they're together and they can talk about anything, that whenever this person, you know, says, I'm not ready, you're like, oh, but the, you know, it's so hard because this is my person. They're like the person I want to be with and they're the right person for me. If only they could see that.
It's right, like, but them seeing that is why it's not going to work.
And
or them not seeing that, rather.
Yeah, it's why it's not going to work and it's why it's not nearly as important as you're making it.
Right.
It, you know, so it goes back to that attention versus intention.
Mm.
We can't mistake attention for intention or we will start thinking something is really, really important to our lives. That actually is not that important at all.
Right. So what would you say is the difference between like a man who wants attention or attention versus intention and then just like an emotionally unavailable guy? Like one of the biggest questions that came in for you was the signs that a man is emotionally unavailable when dating. This person said, in parentheses, even months in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing that and I'm like, why are you months in if... like you're thinking they might be emotionally unavailable. For me, I'm like, if 2 months we haven't defined things, like, you know, that's one of my rules, which we'll get into. But what would you say to this? I know you have so many, you know, videos on this already, but like, what would you say are the main signs about emotional unavailability?
I think there's various ones and they can sometimes feel contradictory. I mean, sometimes someone who races forward in really dramatic ways and who, you know, the term love bombing about mm-hmm. someone who comes into your life and just gives you this insane amount of adulation and, you know, says all these very grandiose things to you. You know, that in itself, that feels like someone who's very emotionally available, but it can be a cover
right.
for someone who's looking for perfection and has projected that onto you. But the first time they find a flaw or something that's not perfect about you, they're immediately going to become unavailable and their attention is going to vanish.
Mm.
You know, that's not someone who's available. That's someone who's idealizing people and relationships, or more in a more sinister way, trying to make you fall in love with them as quickly as possible so that they can get everything they want from you and then move on once they've got it. Mm. But you know, if you find things going at an inorganic pace, that's a strong sign of emotional unavailability. And an inorganic pace can work both ways.
Right.
Because it can also then go to the other extreme of we're 3 months in, 4 months in, and there's no progress whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't feel like we're any closer. We're hanging out and we're having an amazing time together when we hang out, but I don't really hear from you between dates. It feels like you're very hot and cold.
Yeah, that inconsistency is huge.
Inconsistency is a very big word.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay attention to inconsistency.
Mm.
Because when people are inconsistent, that's a sure sign of a lack of intentionality about anything they're doing. They're not looking for a relationship. They're looking for an experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the experience of I call you on a Friday and you're available and it's fun. And oh my God, what a fun Friday date night that I get to have.
Right.
But, you know, then it's over and I go back to my life and I'm not interested in you for the next 6 days.
Yeah, I love that you were the first person that I saw kind of make that distinction of it's not that they're not interested at all. They're just looking for an experience. That's mm-hmm. a really amazing way to put it, because they still want to experience something with you, but that something is not a relationship.
And it eliminates all of the confusion, because this thing we keep telling ourselves that, but they texted me. So why would they text me if they don't like me? No, they like you.
Enough to hang out with you on Friday, but not, you know, bring you home to their family.
Yeah. Or they don't like anyone enough for that, because they're genuinely just not available for anything more. So they may be attracted to you. They may have fun when they're with you. They may even miss you.
Right.
When they're not with
dangerous.
You. None of that makes them someone who's a good bet for you.
Right.
This is the part we have to start getting more ruthless about, is that we have to decide before the fact, what path am I on? What is important to me? Because if we haven't decided what's important to us, then anyone can come along with any novelty factor, with any excitement, with any level of charisma or sexiness, and we'll fall for it. We'll give up our lives for it. We'll skip work for it.
Mm.
We'll ditch our friends for it. We'll do whatever, you know, we'll just want to be close to it because this feels amazing. It's like a drug.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a drug we all want, by the way. We all want to feel that closeness to someone. We all want to feel like we're not alone in the world. We all want to feel the promise of, you know, passion, of romance, of safety, of a potential relationship, especially if we've wanted that our whole lives. So when something comes along and it like feels like hope, we will cling on to that thing. But so much of that clinging on comes from having not decided what's important to us before we go in. And what I mean by that is, if you get to a point in your life where you go, one of the most important things I can possibly have is someone who is actually dating with a sense of purpose and intentionality, someone who wants to build something. They may not know for sure that they want to build it with me yet, but I need to find someone who's on that path and values relationships. You might say that because you know you've done the opposite over and over again and it never works and it always brings you pain.
Yeah.
When you know that, or let's just take a different example. You're at a certain point in your life where you go, I want to have kids. And so frankly, anyone who's not interested in having a family in their life, again, they don't need to know that they want it with me after two dates. But anyone who's stressed that they're not interested in having a family should not even be a candidate for date three.
Totally.
But you can only be that ruthless if you've been honest about what your path is with yourself before you ever step into the arena with anybody else. Because otherwise, whatever their sales pitch is, you're like, well, I don't even really know what I want. So I'll hear it.
For women, that advice is paramount. It's so important. No, you need to know what you want. You need to know your, mm-hmm. you know, non-negotiables. For men, I see, of course, I'm not a man, so please tell me, that sometimes it takes that woman, and it's not like, you know, I'm not trying to plant the seed of like, you can change that man. No, you definitely shouldn't be finding some disaster man and being the woman to change him type of thing. But sometimes a man is just like living his life mm-hmm. and, you know, enjoying whatever, and then meets this woman and is like, wow, with this woman, I see this. And I like, I realizing maybe I wanted it in the future, but now I feel like I want it with this woman.
Yeah.
You know?
By the way, life is all about calculations. If you have 3 years left biologically to have a child, and that's been your dream mm-hmm. for many, many years, and it feels to you like your life will not be complete in some way if you don't achieve that, which, by the way, I don't believe in that idea. I have a whole chapter in the book about the course called The Question of Having a Child.
Yeah.
And I did that chapter because I want people to start to just, I want to invite people to the table to challenge them on some of those ideas they have. Because I think there's more than one way to be happy in life.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know that's your plan A, that that's something you really, really want, and you have a very limited time left biologically to do that, then if you meet someone who says, I'm not interested in having a family, are you the person that should take the risk on that guy?
No.
No. Like, you know, maybe he will change for somebody. Maybe he will 5, 10 years from now get to the point where he says, wow, you know what's crazy? I always said I didn't want kids. And now I just, it's the greatest thing in my life. And I'm so happy. Maybe he will get there. You are not the person who should be placing a bet on that guy.
Mm-hmm.
If you were 24 or 25, or 27, and you're like, yeah, I can burn 3 years here and see, still go out and
don't
have time.
Don't even do it. Don't
no,
even do
I'm
it.
Not saying it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But my point is the calculation is different than if you're 37 and you're like, I got to move on this. If this is something I really want, I have to take this really seriously. I have mm-hmm. to be honest with myself about how important this is. Then the calculation is very, very different for you. Now, if we take that out of the equation and we just say you're just trying to find a life partner and you meet some guy and he's in a bit of a single phase of his life and he's enjoying it, and but you have an amazing date with him, well, fine. Maybe he will see that there's something with you that he wants, but he's not going to see that most likely on his own.
Right.
Without any standards from your side.
Totally.
Without any barriers to entry,
mm-hmm.
like then you, it's almost like you need to see, it's okay for that guy to be given a shot, but what's the price of admission for week 3 in your life?
Right.
What's the price of admission for month 4 in your life? Because many people are hoping someone's going to change, but the price of admission to the next month of your time and energy and emotion and body doesn't go up.
Yeah.
It's the same as it was on date one. And mm-hmm. you're just hoping that one day this guy is suddenly going to have a magical turnaround and he's going to be the guy that suddenly realizes how valuable you are. And the mistake we make is that instead of saying, I need to have some boundaries here, I need to have some standards for what I ask for in the way of progression for me to continue to give this person my time. Instead, people do the opposite, which is they say, I really hope this person changes their mind and suddenly feels like they see all the benefits of having a relationship with me and don't want to be single anymore. And the way that I'm going to convince them
is by making it easy.
Is by doing so much, by
giving them so much.
Giving
totally.
Them so much that
oh
they're
God.
Like, I can't lose this mm-hmm. woman. Oh my God. I finally see how amazing she is. Unfortunately, the opposite happens. Totally. It's a counterintuitive thing because we think that just the more we give someone mm-mm. without asking, the more they're going to see our value. What happens is they start to take more and more for granted what we're giving them yep. because there is no mutual exchange of energy that's asked for you to keep giving it. And look, this isn't just something people do when they're manipulators. It's something we do it with family.
It's nature. Yeah.
Like mom makes Christmas and does all the, puts the presents under the tree.
And we're like, why didn't you get the cookies I like?
Yeah. Yeah. Like you wake up as a kid in the morning, you wake up and the presents are just wrapped. You didn't realize your mom was up at 3 a.m.
Right.
Wrapping presents, that it took 3 days to get the shopping in, to cook the meal. It took 10 days to decorate the house. It took, you don't, if mom doesn't sit you down and walk you through how much work that is, you're just, if suddenly next Christmas, none of that was done, you wouldn't be like, wow, you know, it must have been hard for mum this year. Maybe there was so much going on that she didn't have time to do all of that. And you just go, where's Christmas?
Yeah.
That's something we all are in danger of doing with people, is we take for granted the energy that people give us, especially when they ask for nothing in return. And we come to realize with a friend or a family member at some point that they are on the verge of imploding and that they have built up this incredible resentment towards us. And then they explode.
So true.
And go, how dare you? All these years I've done this and I've done that. And we're like, whoa, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even realize, but it's, you know, we're being ignorant, but that ignorance is actually being fed and contributed to by that person's lack of standards about where they give their energy to and what they ask for in return.
Hinge is the dating app designed to be deleted. Why? Hinge gives you a sense of someone's personality and lets you share your own. You get to know potential dates through their unique answers to prompts. Plus, you get a sense of someone's dating intentions and what they're looking for. We talk all about people's dating intentions in this episode. And as you hear Matthew say, it is so important to have your boundaries clear on what you want when it comes to dating. And living in that vulnerable space is actually really powerful. Last night, I was at dinner with my cousins and they always just hand me their phones so I can talk to people on their Hinge. And they get really nervous about responding to people when they match because they don't know what to say and this and that. But it's actually like the first day of college, everyone's nervous. So don't be afraid to start the conversation. My friends are married because she started the conversation with him first on Hinge in the pandemic. They ended up meeting up. They fell in love and now they're having a baby. It's really, really cute. And that could be your story, or your story could be you met someone and it didn't work out and maybe they set you up with their friend. It doesn't have to be this like perfect conventional story. You just never know what it could be. But if you don't download the app and actually experience it, you will never know it all. So on Hinge, there are no rules, timers, or games. If you're feeling inspired, give Hinge a try. Download Hinge today and find someone worth deleting the app for. Back to the episode.
I don't know if you ever watched The Bachelor. I usually don't. This season I'm watching. And something that what you were saying made me think of is every woman, there's like four women left, and every woman is like, to The Bachelor, they're like, I'm falling in love with you. And he's like, I'm falling for you too, you know, whatever whatever he says. And then there's one woman, one candidate or whatever, who's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm falling for you yet. Like, and he's obsessed with her, right? Like, he's for sure choosing this woman because she was honest. She was like, yeah, I've known you for 3 weeks. This is a TV show. Like, I really like you. She's like, but I don't know that I'm falling in love with you yet. She's not just going to say that because she wants to win, right? And you clearly see that he is smitten with her because she's so real and she's not just giving him, you know, what he wants to hear and whatnot. And it makes me think of one of the parts of your new book is about communicating clear boundaries. I hear that as like kind of having rules for yourself because I have these dating rules. And when I told my followers that you were coming on, they were like, you have to ask him what he thinks about your dating rules, which I feel like are similar to the boundaries that you talk about. I just call them rules, but they're really boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And you're either going to hate them or agree with them. So I'll just give you like a few of them real quick. It's like, don't sleep with them on the first date, but not because of, you know, shaming for like slut shaming or anything. More so because, you know, you got to build the tension. It's way more fun to have that build up. Okay. I say no more than 2 drinks on a first date. I just think like, don't get, you want to be clear-headed a little bit, right? I don't think that you need to send a thank you text as a woman dating a man after the first date if you've thanked them on the date already.
Okay.
Because you've already said thank you. And, you know, maybe they walked you home, you had a kiss or like a something. And then he can take it from there.
I'm curious why that one exists.
That one exists because I think that sometimes the intention behind a woman sending a thank you text is like, is he going to text me? And she's interrupting his thought process almost to be like, I need to get a text from him. So maybe if I thank him and remind him that I exist, he's going to text me. And I don't love that because then it blurs the lines of would he have texted you otherwise?
Interesting.
So if you need to text him, I don't think it's thank you again for the date, blah, blah, blah. I think it's just like, I had fun. Or like, that was fun. If you really need to text him. And then he'll be like, yeah, that was so much fun. Like, what are you doing next week? Or whatever.
I almost feel like with that one, intentionality is the thing that really matters.
Exactly.
Like, if someone was really particularly kind of, if they had put thought into the date, or if there was something about it that just felt like it warranted like a sincere thank you.
After thanking them on the date already?
I think so, because it's also, I think there's something nice about that. If you got home and you were like, thanks again for tonight. It really was such a fun time.
Exactly, though. That's very different than like the next day you haven't heard from them and you're doing it at a place of like emptiness. Like,
I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? Neediness.
I think that doing it after the date, like I think it's perfectly okay to say to someone, thanks for tonight. I had such a great time. And then get home and be like, you know, thanks again. That really was such a fun night. Like, I think that just shows that you're someone who's warm, appreciative. I don't think you should do it if there was, you know, if there's nothing to say it about.
Right. Like, if he got you a $20 drink at a bar, do you need to thank him twice?
No, but I do think it's perfectly fine to text someone and say, I had a great time tonight.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I worry about in dating in general right now is that we are following culture. We're not creating culture. So Mitch Albom had a quote, if you don't like the culture, you have to be brave enough to create your own. Mm. That's really important as an idea because there is a dating culture right now that people tend to, people who are serious about finding love really hate because it feels flaky, non-committal, indifferent, based in hookups, not intentionality. People don't call, they're not this, they're not that. They don't text between dates. And what I see is a lot of reactivity and passiveness, but I don't see a lot of leadership.
Yeah.
And it may, you know, from a female perspective for so many women, they may think, well, I don't want to constantly be leading the way. It's not about leading the way by always being the one initiating. It's about leading with the kind of dynamic that you are interested in having with a person and not just hoping that they'll create that dynamic and then responding to it. So picking up the phone between dates and calling someone and being like, hey, thought I'd say hi, what's going on? How's your day? That for a lot of people is an alien thing to do.
Yeah, that's like a no-go for me.
Right. But for me, I'm like, I want to know the person who responds well to that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know the person that if I pick up the phone to them, they're like, they may at first be caught a little off guard and be like, huh, this is strange. No one does this. But if what I've done is invite someone to a more intimate connection, because I'm not going to just interact with you from a distance the same way everyone else is. If I play that game, then I'm going to get the same results as everybody else.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean, by the way, I should call you from, you know, I've got nothing to do tonight, so I'm going to call you for 3 hours.
Yeah. No.
And, but like, if I'm on my way somewhere,
yeah,
I've got 10 minutes to spare and I pick up the phone and call you, or even one level down, I leave you a voice note so that you can hear my voice, which is a very, it feels more intimate.
Yeah.
Anyone who get voice notes from someone knows that there's an intimacy to that. Then it invites them to a greater level of connection and intimacy and effort, importantly. And that starts to, you then become the person shaping the culture you want instead of mirroring the culture they give you. And the problem with that is what we end up mirroring is indifference, distance, inconsistency, and it actually ends up creating the result we don't want. Because if you mirror their lack of consistency, it looks like you just doing the right thing in a way, because you're like, well, they're not texting me, so I'm not going to text them. They're not calling, so I'm not going to pick up the phone. But actually, what a lot of people do in that situation is when that person does text you a week from now after being inconsistent and says, what are you up to? You also are trying to mirror their like coolness, because you're like, well, I don't want to be like, I was waiting for a text the last 5 days.
So you try to take longer to respond than
message back as if everything's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So they text you and they're like, hey, how's your day? And you're like, oh my God, it's so good. I'm just blah, blah, blah. How's yours? And the message you're sending is, I didn't feel anything these last 5 days. It wasn't in any way strange to me that there was zero consistency after a great date.
Right.
I am just giving you light, fluffy, frothy me who's just carefree, happy, fun. And because that's what you're being. And I feel like that's the right thing to do, to not communicate too much interest. But all that person is learning is on the most kind of, you know, darker side in some ways.
Like, I can get away with this.
I can absolutely just pick this person up and put mm-hmm. them down when I want. And when I come back to them, they give me the same good energy all over again.
That's so true.
But what they're also learning, even on the more innocent side, is they have no idea what it is you want.
Right.
They have no idea. I write a story in the book about a friend of mine who went away for a few days, and it was someone he'd only been on one or two dates with, but they'd had great dates. He goes away and she didn't really hear from him. Or when he got back, he texted her and she said to him, I don't know if she said strange, right? She said, I felt a little sad when you didn't text me. It made me feel like you were sharing your bed with someone on your trip. And for him, what he communicated to me was that made me be more intentional. Because she was right, by the way. Like, she was one of several people in that moment. But for him, it was like, oh, no one else is saying things like this to me. Everyone else is just being chill.
Is letting me get away with this.
Yeah. And she's actually it's not like she came from a place of like, you've done something terribly wrong.
Right.
It's just that she's communicated that
I'm on to you.
Or that she would feel that there was a vulnerability. Yeah. No, I already like you enough that if you were going away now and sharing your bed with someone else, that, you know, that would make me a little sad. And it's even like, there's even there like a, maybe I don't have a right to be sad. We're not together, but I feel a little sad that I didn't hear from you, because that's what it made me think. And from his side, it was like, this person isn't going to be okay with being just another person that I'm dating. There's an intentionality to this person. Yeah. And that's you're then now creating intentionality. Instead of just waiting to see if they're being intentional.
I agree with that.
You're being intentional, and that, some people are going to see that and go, whoa, I don't want this. I don't need this hassle in my life. I'm just having...
Yeah, and then you'll know right away.
Then you'll know. But other people, you'll actually be giving them a cue as to how to see you. People need cues about how to see you. People need to know how seriously to take you. And that comes from us. It doesn't come from them deciding. It comes from us. And that's, when I talk about being passive, that's what I'm talking about. There's not enough leadership in our own dating lives, that I'm going to instruct people through my words, my actions, my energy, my boundaries, my standards about how to see me.
Yeah, that I agree with. And I love the idea of the leadership and like the originality, individuality. When you're dating someone, you want them to stand out and not just do what everyone else does. But I will say, like, the idea of calling you up and doing like, that is a luxury that men have that I don't think women have. Like, I'm pretty sure all of my guy friends, if they went on a date and the girl just randomly called them in between the dates, they'd be like, call the police. This girl is stalking me. She needs help. You know, like, she's unwell. I think guys are luckier in that, like, they can do that. And we might be like, oh, that was a lot. But it doesn't completely, you know, make us throw them in the garbage. Whereas if a girl did that, I think a guy's default is like, she's obsessed with me. Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong types of guys, but...
I don't think you're wrong in the dynamic that you're talking about, where it's for sure easier for men to get away with proactivity than it is for women. But there's nothing... Firstly, people will learn. If they think you're obsessed with them, or if they think that you now are chasing them, they will learn very quickly that that's not the case by the standards that you have around your time and your energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you picked up the phone to say hi to them on a Wednesday for a 5-minute call.
Right.
Or even if, again, let's take it down a notch. Any woman can send, without worrying about being too proactive, a voice note.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a pattern breaker. If someone, they're used to texting everyone all the time. If someone sends you a text like, how's your day? And you decide to leave a voice note instead of a text, and you're on the go on your way somewhere, but you say, yeah, hi, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And there's something sexy about a voice note. They're like, oh, I'm in the room with you. I can hear your voice. It's attacking more of my senses. There's nothing overeager or desperate about a voice note, but it is like going to break their pattern that they've probably got with many other people that they could be dating, or anyone they could be dating. But if 4 days from now, or if let's say 2 weeks from now, after not really engaging with you, that person who you had an amazing date with 2 weeks ago, who you've barely heard from since, but you did leave a voice note or a quick call, if they now say to you on a Friday, hey, do you want to do something tonight? They will, if you have standards in that moment, and when someone's asking for something from you, that's where your leverage is.
Right.
So now they want to see you, or now they're texting you, hoping for a text back. At that point, you're going to now show them who you really are if they're mistaken.
How do you do that? Like, what should you say back in that case?
I'll give you an example from my own relationship.
Yeah.
Because I was that person who was long distance. I was back in LA. Audrey was back in London. And I got to a point where I was like starting to kind of fade out. I wasn't texting as much. I was just, you know, out living my life. And I was like, I just, the idea of a long distance relationship to me at the time, I was like, I can't do this. So I just started to fade. But I did the classic thing of, I'm going to still reach out for a little hit of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I reached out to Audrey and I think I said, I miss you, or I said, I'm thinking of you. And this was after like us being fairly out of touch for a few weeks. And she wrote back and she said, hey, I hope you're well. To be honest, I don't really know what to say when you send me something like that. We haven't really felt that close for a while now. And rightly or wrongly, this message just comes across like a bid for attention.
Good for her.
She literally sent that to me. And for me in the moment, I was self-aware enough and also had a strong enough kind of compass of my own to be like, okay, check myself. Yeah, that was what I was doing. She's right, which was not a great thing. You know, I got called out on it. It didn't make me feel good. I caught myself and I was like, yeah, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, and clearly she's not interested in this kind of intermittent connection. So I was like, yeah, I can't do that again. And I didn't. Like, I was like, fair enough. You're right. And I'm not going to do that again. If I was confused about who she was at that point or how much she, you know, liked me, what I learned in that moment was she may have liked me in the past.
But right now she's not.
Maybe she still likes me a bit now.
Yeah.
But not enough to be interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, yeah, I don't like you enough for this.
Right.
I never will. Like, this is not what I want. She knew her path. She was being intentional and she saw that I wasn't. And so I think we get way too obsessed with what us having a moment of proactivity is going to look like, and not nearly obsessed enough with how much we're going to correct any misrepresentation at the moment of having a standard.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to obsess over what it looks like in a moment of proactivity if we've got ourselves covered.
Right.
When someone tries to take advantage, or when someone assumes we like them more than we really do, or they assume we're obsessed. But by the way, if I respect myself and I'm looking for something real, I'm absolutely, I couldn't be less obsessed with someone who's not trying.
Yeah, that's
and they're going to learn that the moment that person comes back to you for a hit of attention or right. for a spontaneous date or for an experience or mm-hmm. for intimacy, or they're going to learn that. And so I just think that that's why I want to shift people's perspective, because the on a scale, it's like if you look at a scale of like what creates opportunity in your love life, on one end of the scale, you have ultimate pride. And ultimate pride would have you sitting in a room, never doing anything.
Right.
Screw everybody. I'm not going to give them a chance to reject me. I'm not going to reach out to someone on a dating app. I'm not going to give them a call. I'm not going to try. No one's going to have that kind of power to say no to me. So pride will have you not doing anything. The extreme of proactivity at the other end of that scale will have you being relentlessly proactive, regardless of what someone is giving you back. Mm. And that's dangerous too,
right?
Because now you turn into the chaser. So the right answer is somewhere between extreme pride and extreme proactivity.
It's just like self-respect and confidence, it sounds like, right? Like,
yeah, but it's part of confidence is saying you don't have that much. Look, I'm out there talking about this new book right now, right? This book is my pride and joy. I've worked for years on it. I'm so excited about it. It's going to change lives. And part of this period, this chapter of the year, is me wanting to get this book into as many hands as possible. Now, in order to do that, I have a bunch of friends who have podcasts and things, and that's all great. But I also need to reach out to people that I don't know.
Right.
And be like, hey, I love your podcast. I'd love to join you for a conversation on it about my new book. Now, I'm confident enough that I can reach out to that person who maybe doesn't know me or doesn't care about me and say, I'd love to join you for a conversation, knowing that they might say no and being like, honestly, it doesn't matter to me that much because mm-hmm. I don't need you.
Right.
I don't need you. It'd right. be nice to come and have that mm-hmm. conversation, but this book's going to be a hit with or without you.
Right. So it's like the not needing confidence is where it really
confidence happens in the moment of showing a standard to someone who's not giving you enough. But confidence also happens in a moment of vulnerability
right.
when you try or you ask someone a question or you ask them, you approach someone or you reach out to them with a phone call. That's a moment of confidence where you say, I can be vulnerable here for 5 minutes because my love life is not riding on whether you get back to me or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think about this in general with people right now. I'm like, it's okay. Anyone can say no. Anyone right. can say no. It's right. okay. And if anyone goes away thinking, man, that guy was really desperate. He wanted to be on my podcast. It's like, you will learn who I am the more you get to know me. And you'll mm-hmm. see that's actually not me at all.
Mm-hmm.
That you were lucky in that moment that I wanted to reach out to you and that you were on my mind in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not the person who's available every day after that.
Right.
And that's the mindset we have to bring into our love life.
So true.
So I think we obsess over sometimes the wrong things. It's okay to, what we should be doing is saying, I was proactive yesterday and I got very little in return. Mm-hmm. Why am I being proactive again today?
Mm-hmm. So true. I love that. Like, that mindset of, okay, like it'd be nice to see this person again, but I don't need to see this person again. I don't need this person, because once you start thinking that you need someone versus them being a nice additive to your life, that's why I hate when someone's like, you complete me. Be right. complete. Be complete. Like, let them be like the cherry on top. But if you are in the mindset, I need this person to respond. No, it'd be nice if this person responded. But if not, I'm still going to have a great time with my girlfriends tonight. I'm going to, you know, yep. meet someone someday.
The irony is that when you don't need someone, you're more willing to reach out.
Mm, exactly.
That's actually the irony, is you think that it's the desperate thing is reaching out, but actually the desperate thing is overthinking for a month whether you're going to reach out and obsessing over it. And because you think the stakes are so high that when you do it, you have to do it perfectly. That's the fearful part.
Mm-hmm.
Confidence is, yeah, I'll reach out. If I don't make the sale on this one, who cares?
I'm not. Right.
I got 100 other sales I can make. Like, I don't need to make the sale on this one, so I can pick up the phone and know that my life does not live or die by, my success does not ride on whether this happens or not.
Right. So it's more about the why.
It's about your intentionality behind it, and it's about not what you can't do, what turns you from someone being proactive into the chaser is when the amount of energy you continue to give is in no way based on what they give you back.
Mm-hmm.
If you text someone first this morning and you say, hey, you know, morning beautiful, morning handsome, morning lovely, morning you, whatever you want to say, whatever's natural to you, I hope you have a great day today. You could just say that. You're not even asking a question, but you're just reaching out, pinging them with a bit of love, a bit of affection. Now, if that person texts you back, great. But what I would be looking at is the next morning or the morning after that, do they reach out to you first in the morning? Because it's no good continuing to be the one that reaches out to them every morning and going, they texted me back, so they must like me. There's something here. Yeah, but you're always initiating. What you can initiate today, but don't be the person who initiates the next three times. Because now you're the one setting up a dynamic that you actually don't want. It's not about the one time you were proactive. It's about, do you keep under the guise of being proactive, being the one who reaches out, even though you're not getting equivalent energy from them and even though they're never initiating with you?
Right. Because that's a question I've gotten before, which drives me insane for them when they're like, they never initiate with me. But when I do, they're responsive and we go out on a date. It's like, okay, but...
Yeah, but that doesn't... Yeah, exactly. That doesn't tell you anything. And that's... You have to be looking at, is this a mutual exchange of energy?
Yeah.
And exactly. that we often are just paying attention to whether when we ping something out into the universe, it gives us something back.
Totally.
But that's them being reactive. It's not them meeting you at the level of proactivity that you're willing to give to them.
Which is the same with the thank you text. If they just text you back because you said thank you, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're into you.
It could just mean
they're responding.
And that's true. Yeah. But I think that you can measure that over time. You don't have to measure that on that night. Like, I think you can look at the next day. Do they reach out to
you?
What you shouldn't do is if they don't reach out to you the next day, having been the one to send a thank you.
Don't reach out again.
Oh yeah. God. Don't make you the person who reaches out again, because you're not going to, in that sense, yes, you're right. You're not going to learn anything.
Right.
We didn't do your other two rules. What was the sleeping?
Oh my God, there's so many, but I feel like I'm keeping you over time now. Well, a lot of mine is like about like letting the man lead.
So maybe we'll just do these other two rules. But the one was the sex one, right?
Yeah.
So that was the
no sex on the first date. Yeah.
I think people have to connect with themselves and go, how does this make me feel when I do it? If I sleep with this person on a first date and then it doesn't go anywhere afterwards, am I going to feel used?
Exactly.
Am I going to feel unhappy? Mm-hmm. Am I going to feel like I wish I didn't do it? If that's the case, then it's not advisable for you to do it.
But it's like if you're doing it because you want to have sex and you're having fun, you don't care what happens after.
Yeah, but you better not care what happens after.
Yeah, you better not. But that's
don't lie to yourself about
but
that.
But that's when the guy is into you, when he could tell that you don't care what happens after. But if he thinks that you're having sex because you want to like get him to be into you,
no, that's a problem. And by the way, he's not going to be more into you because you had sex with him.
Yeah, of course.
And he's not going to feel closer to you either because you had sex with him.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily anyway. That's absolutely not a guarantee. You can want it to go somewhere afterwards. But you have to know about yourself that if nothing happens after this, I'm going to be totally cool and happy. Mm-hmm. Like it's not going to bother me. If you know that you have a pattern of feeling weird and strange and just it doesn't help your self-esteem, if after the fact that person doesn't call you again, don't do it right now.
Yeah.
Don't do it right now. Measure intentionality over time.
Yeah.
See who they are first. You know, you can't know that on a date. I don't care how wonderful someone seems or how many things they said that, you know, felt good to you. You just don't know.
Yeah. And then the other one was no more than two drinks on a first date. What do you think?
I mean, that's probably a pretty good rule for life. I mean, if you were going on a business lunch with someone that mattered to you, like you probably wouldn't have more than two drinks.
Right. 'Cause
at that point you start to trust yourself a little less to be the version of you that you feel really represents you.
Right.
And why would you do that to yourself on a date where you want to represent yourself as the person you really are, not the person you are three drinks in.
Right.
So I think that's a pretty good rule.
Thank you. I'm so glad. I feel like ultimately we do have like the same mindset behind like how you should date. I think mine is more rigid and yours is more like thoughtful and intentional.
I think that my opinion is sometimes rigidity helps when we feel like we need to ingrain a certain standard for ourselves. And we almost are learning to trust ourselves. Flexibility is something we can kind of develop as we start to go, well, I trust myself to be able to reach out to this person. And if afterwards it doesn't go my way, be like, so what? I trust myself to, I write a story in my book about a friend of mine who told herself she wasn't going to sleep with anyone on a first before she was in a relationship with them because that had never worked for her in the past. And that's not, you know, I don't say that's right or wrong. It just for her in that moment, that right. was the rule she made for herself. Mm-hmm. And she's now engaged to a guy that before they were in a serious relationship, she ended up sleeping with him.
Right.
They'd been dating for months at that point. And, you know, she felt like this is someone I really, really care about. And this feels good to me and I feel safe. So she did it. But even then, she trusted herself to kind of not just go off the rails with that. She came back to him and said, look, I kind of feel like I let myself down a bit because I don't want to do this outside of a relationship. I'm glad we did. I have no regrets.
Right.
But let's not do that again until we know that we're in a serious relationship. And he respected that. And by the way, now they're engaged. There was a kind of trusting herself to, okay, she stepped outside of the lines of what she said she wanted to do, but she also trusted herself to be able to kind of reinforce that principle, that rule for herself afterwards. And so I just think that what, you know, sometimes we need rigidity in the beginning, and the more we trust ourselves, the more we can kind of go, yeah, I can play around the lines a little bit because I always know I can correct.
So true. Yeah. And I 100% agree with that. I actually, with my own rules, broke one of my own rules because it's like, it's a guideline. It's take what works for you and leave the rest.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And I ended up like one of the rules is don't initiate dates really with the guy, like let him initiate all the dates until you're official. And I initiated the second date with my husband. But what I said was because I didn't really initiate the first, but I had reached out to him because I was in a relationship and I was like, I'm single now if you want to ask me out. And then he asked me out. For the second one, my text to him was, just because I asked you on the first date doesn't mean I'm asking you on the second, which was my way of being like,
your
this
turn,
isn't
buddy.
What I do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's also your way of saying ball's in your court now.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I think that it's a nice way of like, you know, if you keep going over to someone else's side of town and then they invite you on another date on their side of town, be the person who says, your turn to come to my side of town.
Exactly.
Let's go to this bar. And if they say, you know, well, it sounds like a lot of work or whatever, it's like, okay, then we know where we stand, don't we? This is a dynamic of convenience,
right.
Not one where you're willing to actually expend any real energy or compromise in service of it. So yeah, I think that we all need to just be very intentional about what's not worked for us in the past and then experiment with new ways of being. And we don't have to be religious about those for years on end. We could just experiment with new ways of being and see how it feels. Try new ways of being in your dating life on for size. And when you get different results from being different ways, it could be very addictive because you realize that there's a different world out there than the one you've created for yourself all these years. And that creates hope. There's a whole chapter I have, and I'll finish with this because I realize we're at time, but there's a whole chapter on, one's called Never Satisfied. And the chapter that follows it is called How to Rewire Your Brain. And one of the reasons we're never satisfied is because we struggle to ever really be happy. We either chase people that make us miserable, or we find ourselves settling for someone who feels safe but doesn't excite us.
Mm.
And we go in a loop between those two different things constantly throughout our lives. And then we're like, why am I never happy? I just can't be happy. And it makes us feel like we're broken. And so I wrote a whole chapter called How to Rewire Your Brain, which is really about finding happiness in love. Because there's a big difference between getting results in love and finding happiness in love. And that chapter on how to rewire your brain is more than how to get results. It's about how to find happiness in your love life. So, but for anyone who wants to grab a copy, this is the piece of work I'm probably most proud to have ever created. I have a retreat that I do every year, which is my pride and joy, but that's a very different thing.
Yeah.
But the in terms of like having something that people can take away with them to know, you know, my core principles that they can use to find love.
Yeah.
This book is kind of the big thesis of everything I've ever done. And I am so, so excited for people to read it. And it, by the way, if anyone wants to grab a copy that not only gets you a copy, but also a bonus to an event I am doing on May the 4th, you can go to lovelifebook.com. Because when you go there, you can buy from any retailer you want on that page, mm-hmm. whether it's Amazon, Barnes and Noble, bookstores, whatever. But once you've got your receipt, come back to that page, lovelifebook.com, and you can use your receipt to get a ticket to a big event that I'm doing virtually on May the 4th, where I'm going to do like a live coaching of the book principles. And it's called Find Your Person, the event. So for anyone who's really serious, maybe you've been banging your head against a wall for a long time, feels like nothing's worked, or maybe you're single in a season of your life where you've never imagined you would be single and you want to get back out there, but you're also scared to get back out there, or you need a new approach. That's what this event is going to do. So it's on May the 4th. It's called Find Your Person. And anyone who buys a book will get a ticket to this event. And that's all at lovelifebook.com.
That's amazing. Before we close out, we usually do a quick rapid fire poll question thing. I'm only going to ask you like two because okay. we're running out of time, which is totally my fault. Okay. A guy from Hinge seems great, but you found out he lives in a suburb 40 minutes away and lied about his location. Deal breaker, yes or no?
Oh, but on Hinge, he'd said he lives uh-huh. close to you. Yeah, I'd say deal breaker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hang on, wait. What? When you say he said he lives 40 minutes, like he said, you mean he set his radius to like 3 miles, but he actually lives 40 minutes
yeah,
away?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, that's not a deal breaker. Mm-hmm. I think that's fine. I think that, that's
okay,
fine.
Okay, and then at what date number is it a red flag that he hasn't mentioned he was previously married? 1, 2, 3, or 4?
I mean, I suppose it depends if you've ever actually asked him anything explicit about that.
True, but you have to say 1, 2, 3, or 4. It's none rapid fire. None? Okay, fine. You're pleading the fifth. Last one. Is it worth it to be mad if you see that his explore page on Instagram is all women's thirst trapped photos? Like, you know, sexy photos of women. Yes, it's okay to be mad. No, it's not a big deal.
Like, are you together?
Yeah.
It's okay to be deeply uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring that up.
Yeah, but that's Instagram just serves this stuff to guys, I swear. Like, you like one photo of a woman and then you're
getting
served them.
If you look at my explore page,
yeah,
it's you're crazy. Not going to see thirst trap photos.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. Okay, so maybe something to look into.
I guarantee uh-huh. you, if you look at my explore page, yeah. you're going to see like pictures and videos of like snacks in Japan.
yeah.
You're going to see people fighting in like, you know, like MMA or boxing or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not going to see a bunch of that.
Okay, so,
like,
so maybe it's reflective.
I think it's fair to be uncomfortable.
Okay. I love that. All right. There's literally so many questions here, but I think we just have to do a part two another time. Matthew, where can everyone follow you? And you mentioned where to get your book, but feel free to drop it again.
Well, you can follow me on any of the platforms, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook. But, you know, and I put out free advice every week on those places. But I would say to you, to anybody, this book is the most valuable thing you'll ever get from me. It's called Love Life, How to Raise Your Standards, Find Your Person, and Live Happily No Matter What. And, you know, I put hundreds of hours into this. So for the price of a book, you're getting the most consolidated version of the key principles that I have created over 17 years of coaching people in their love lives about how to find love. So I'm very proud of it. And I think people really love it. And the link for that is lovelifebook.com.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.